are back on the County Grapevine, and it's time for the County Naturally. Here's Pamela.
Welcome to the County Naturally. I'm Pamela Stagg. Today, staying safe.
The structures in Banff have reduced wildlife vehicle collisions by over 75%.
We humans know how to cross a road. Animals, not so much. What's the best way to help them across major highways? Dr. Ryan Danby is an expert on conservation biology and the director and professor of the School of Environmental Studies at Queen's University. Welcome to the program, Ryan.
Thanks for having me, Pamela.
I'm appalled by the number of animals, reptiles, and birds killed on roads. It's particularly distressing when a large mammal, a deer or a bear, dies by the roadside. One of the ways to prevent roadkill is by installing wildlife tunnels, underpasses, and overpasses on major highways. Banff is probably the best-known area in Canada for this. It has 6 underpasses and 38 overpasses. Ryan, how do wildlife overpasses and underpasses work?
An overpass is like a bridge over the highway for wildlife. So it's natural habitat, grass, sometimes planted with trees to provide habitat that animals can cross the highway safely. An underpass is underneath the highway. Underpasses are typically, not always, but typically much smaller and range from literally bridges to small culverts. So very different structures, but both with the same goal: facilitating the movement of animals from one side of the roadway to the other safely.
Do different species of animals choose to use an underpass or an overpass?
Yes, because of the size of the structure, smaller animals typically will use the underpasses, and larger animals will typically use the overpasses. Larger animals like deer, bears, even mid-sized mammals like bobcats, fishers, etc., will tend to use those overpasses more frequently than underpasses. And of course, if an underpass is quite small, some of those larger animals can't even fit. But those underpasses can be key conduits for smaller animals, turtles and snakes in particular, that don't move as quickly.
How long does it take wildlife to get used to overpasses and underpasses?
That's a really excellent question. Our experience with these structures is growing as they're becoming a little more common. Some animals will start using them immediately, but the experience shows in Banff with grizzly bears, it can take 4 or 5 years before they will start using them regularly.
I understand that the elk used them while they were still under construction.
I have heard that.
Banff showed that the underpasses and overpasses worked really well to reduce road mortality. Ryan, what kind of decrease did researchers see?
The most recent statistics I've seen is that the structures in Banff have reduced wildlife vehicle collisions by over 75%. Quite a lot. Ungulates, deer, elk, moose have even seen a larger decrease, well over 80%. Really quite significant. Now, these overpasses and underpasses are paired with fencing, and that has shown to be key. The overpasses and underpasses are effective on their own, but to make them particularly useful, they need to be paired with fencing, which directs the animals to the crossing structure. Otherwise, the animals just jump across the highway as they might normally do.
So what I'm hearing is the fencing funnels them to the crossings.
That's right. Important, though, if we fence along a highway without a crossing structure, we're separating populations on both sides of the highway, not allowing for that connectivity, which is a natural flow of organisms across the landscape.
When the overpasses and underpasses were installed around Banff, researchers discovered that bears had changed genetically as a result. What happened?
Once those structures were built, black bears and grizzly bears showed an increased genetic diversity on each side of the highway. It showed that these overpasses were allowing for the exchange of genes between animals on both sides of the highway. So it was allowing animals to cross the highway to mate.
And that makes for a much more resilient population if you have, say, a disease coming into the population.
Yeah, smaller populations are more susceptible to extinction. It prevents the population from being adaptive to environmental change. It can result in the random loss of genes from the gene pool. And that can, yes, as you say, can make them more susceptible to certain illnesses.
Next, a migration corridor right next door. County Naturally, and I'm Pamela Stagg. Today, Dr. Ryan Danby is on the phone from the School of Environmental Studies at Queen's University. We used to think that many mammals stayed in one place, like cows in a field. But one of the animals who changed our thinking was a moose called Alice. Ryan, tell me about Alice.
Alice was radio tagged in Adirondack State Park in New York in the late 1990s as part of a study to monitor moose populations. And in the year 2000, Alice left the Adirondacks and started moving northwards. Later that year, she was detected in Algonquin Park, 600 kilometers north. To get there, she had to swim across the St. Lawrence River, get to the St. Lawrence River, first of all, from the Adirondack Mountains, cross the St. Lawrence River, and then make her way northwards to Algonquin Park.
One of the things that's significant about Alice is the route she took from the Adirondacks to Algonquin. It's a route sometimes called A to A. This is an important wildlife corridor, isn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, A to A, Algonquin to Adirondacks, is the only major north-south habitat corridor within the Great Lakes watershed. It is a strip of Canadian Shield that extends southwards, almost like a long peninsula around Algonquin Park and then northwards from that. This extension of the Canadian Shield that we call the Frontenac Arch aligns with the A2A corridor. It's not particularly well suited for agriculture. As a result, it has a lot more natural habitat than those more settled landscapes. So a lot more forest, wetlands, and lots of small lakes. As a result of that rolling topography, we have the Thousand Islands region, which acts as literally little islands for wildlife to cross the St. Lawrence River as they move northwards or conversely southwards through this corridor.
And in the winter, too, I would assume they could cross the ice.
Yes, indeed. We see that with deer through the wintertime.
Apart from Alice the moose, who else uses the A2A wildlife corridor as a migratory route?
The corridor is a migratory route for birds on an annual basis. The corridor also acts as a dispersal corridor that would allow for animals to disperse, just like Alice the moose in these one-time dispersals. So you can think of moose, for instance, but also species like fishers, lynx, bobcat, the smaller size carnivores. It's important for those species in particular because these are species that were either locally or regionally extirpated during European colonization, and the corridor has provided the habitat for them to recolonize some of these lost habitats.
I was very surprised to learn that when fishers were wiped out by the fur trade in eastern Ontario, they were replaced by fishers that came up from the Adirondacks.
Yeah, it's a wonderful illustration of exactly the importance of the A2A corridor in facilitating that dispersal of species. And that becomes more important as climate continues to warm and species ranges are moving northwards with the warming climate.
Next, don't take the 401. This County Naturally, and I'm Pamela Stagg. Today, Dr. Ryan Danby is on the line from Queen's University. Ryan, there are plans to widen the 401 significantly in eastern Ontario. How wide will it be, and where?
Right now, the long-term planning scenario between Kingston and Brockville is a total of 8 lanes in both directions.
And Kingston to Brockville takes it right through the heart of the Frontenac Arch and the A2A Wildlife Corridor.
That's right. Highway 401 bisects the A2A corridor at its narrowest point. If you imagine a map, it's much like an hourglass where we've got two anchor parks, Algonquin and Adirondacks, and then that narrow pinch point between those two bulbs is the Frontenac Arch. And the Highway 401 runs right across that pinch point. And effectively, it bisects it right now, and widening it will act as a larger barrier to the movement of animals across that region.
Do we have any sense of which species and the numbers of animals who try to cross the 401 in that area at the moment?
Yeah, we have a good sense of the different species. We know this by way of road mortality surveys that my students and I and others involved with the Algonquin Adirondacks Collaborative have performed over the last 10 years. We've done many surveys on foot along the side of the road, tallying up the number of dead animals hit by vehicles. The diversity is frankly amazing. It's not just raccoons. You know, a lot of people driving down the highway, they'll see dead raccoons or porcupines and think that that's it. And as you're driving along at 100 kilometers an hour, that's what you tend to see, those larger size animals. But most of the wildlife that's killed are smaller animals. And snakes and turtles are particularly susceptible. Those are also species that are threatened and endangered, like the Blanding's turtle and the gray rat snake. These are particularly susceptible to road mortality because turtles like to nest in sandy gravel shoulders along the side of the highway. Snakes like to bask on the highway, so they're actually attracted to the roadside. And we also have found dead deer frequently, but also we found remains of a black bear, fishers, bobcat, some of these other species of conservation concern.
There's a proposal to have a number of wildlife crossings through the Thousand Islands area to minimize road mortality. Would they be overpasses or underpasses or both?
They'd be both. There's a proposal for 3 overpasses and 1 major underpass, more like a bridge. Those 4 major structures would be complemented in an ideal scenario with several smaller underpasses targeting snakes and turtles and smaller animals. The westernmost one would be adjacent to one of the Thousand Islands National Park properties at the back of Landon's Bay, just east of Gananoque. And then there's another 2 overpasses that are proposed around the Highway 137 interchange area. That's the highway that takes you to Hill Island and then to the United States. And that's an area where we've noticed the highest amount of road mortality of wildlife. And then the 4th major crossing is proposed at Jones Creek, just to the west of Mallorytown. And that's where this major underpass is proposed. The Jones Creek area is quite ecologically significant, not just for its wildlife, but also for major wetland habitat between inland areas and the St. Lawrence River.
Do we have a sense of what kind of costs would be involved?
A lot will depend on the design. The stage we're at right now is the proposal of the locations of these structures and a general sense of what might be entailed. The costs are going to depend more specifically on the engineering required to make them work. The locations have been proposed in areas where we feel that the engineering would be suitable. 2 locations are at major rock outcroppings that would provide a stable foundation for them, but there still needs to be some engineering workups done to assess the safety, etc. A lot will depend on those, but it will be in the several millions of dollars per structure. That cost can be justified in 2 ways, though. 1, ecologically, in terms of the services that wildlife provide us and the desire to habit this earth with other species and provide them with suitable habitat. And the cost associated with that is perhaps a little more elusive. But we can put costs on, and insurance companies do this all the time, we can put costs on the damage caused to vehicles and the resulting loss of life that's caused by wildlife vehicle collisions. There's been some estimates in various parts of the United States, where something like one overpass or major underpass structure can reduce wildlife collisions by so many. If we assign a dollar value to each of those, for instance, a car being damaged by a deer collision, then we can add those all up. And if we can eliminate those wildlife collisions, then we've paid for the cost of one of these structures.
If the 401 is widened and the wildlife crossings are installed, what kind of results would you expect to see in terms of reduced vehicle wildlife collisions?
If they're implemented properly with appropriate fencing, tall enough to prevent deer from jumping over them, so at least 2 meters tall, and there's no gaps in that fencing, I would anticipate similar results for deer as we've seen in Banff and other areas. 75% reduction in mortality of those large mammal species. And at the same time, would also allow for the connectivity between those populations. So we could see recolonization south of the 401 by species like moose that may move into the area and that are currently avoiding that area because there's just too big a risk in terms of crossing the 401.
So what I'm hearing is that wildlife crossing structures through the Thousand Islands area would be significant in terms of protecting animals, reducing collisions, and increasing genetic diversity.
Absolutely. Fourthly, preventing human injury and even loss of life by reducing those collisions and improving human safety.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, you're very welcome.
I've been talking to Dr. Ryan Danby, a conservation biologist, professor, and director of the School of Environmental Studies at Queen's University. He was on the line from Kingston. In the project to promote overpasses and underpasses on the 401, Ryan joined forces with the Algonquin to Adirondacks Conservation Collaborative, particularly Cameron Smith. And that's the program for today. Stag. Thanks for joining me on The County Naturally. See you next week.
Thank you so much, Ryan and Pamela. Next, I'll let you know what's coming up later this week on The County Grapevine. We'll be back soon.